Welcome to the Appliance Educator Podcast, presented by Z-Line Kitchen and Bath, attainable luxury designed in Lake Tahoe. On today's episode of the podcast, we're talking to the go-to guy for grilling on the internet, Greg, with Barbecue Central. All right, everybody, welcome back to the Appliance Educator Podcast. It's your host, Drew, and as usual, I'm joined by my partner in crime, Nick. Nick, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. I'm ready for this chat.
Yeah, we've got some exciting stuff to discuss, and we are joined today by Greg from Barbecue Central. Greg, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate you having me. Look forward to talking barbecue and grilling and whatever else you want to get into.
Yeah, so this whole kind of barbecue experience is going down because I bought a house about 6 to 8 months ago, and it's about to be the springtime and I'm ready to build my outdoor kitchen. And I just love barbecue in general and grilling. It's just like a pastime, honestly. So, Greg is, you know, a man that hosts his own barbecue show called Barbecue Central, and he's the go-to guy for some tips on what we need to grill and how we grill it.
Yeah. So Greg, I mean, we just kind of want to start out where, you know, where did your barbecuing journey begin and what sort of led you on the path to Barbecue Central?
Growing up for me, it was a lot of like everybody my age, probably your age, you guys look a little younger than me. And it was watching your dad go out, fire up a grill, gas or charcoal, maybe do some burgers, dogs, steaks, if you're lucky. But I didn't get in any type of low and slow growing up. Wasn't ever introduced to that. And then like you got a house and got a new grill. It wasn't a super awesome grill, but I really got it into the grilling aspect of it, cooked through the back of it very quickly. And then I was on to get a new grill. This time it was going to be awesome and badass and built really well. And over the course of talking to my cousin, Glenn Rempe, who at the time was a barbecue caterer in Maryland, if you look back, he's the one we can all blame for me getting into this. If I never would have had that phone call, I doubt that anything that's transpired in the last 14 years would have transpired. So having that singular conversation with him telling me about barbecue and pits, which led me to get my first Weber Smoky Mountain. My wife actually got it for me for Father's Day, maybe back in 2004. And then finding online forums. At the time, those were real big pieces of information. And, you know, it seems a little outdated at this point, 2022. That was the hot thing in 2004. There was a website specifically dedicated to the Weber Smoky Mountain. I got really into that. And then I got so into it, I started my own forum. And then from seeing an onslaught of additional barbecue forums over that time, I started a podcast back in 2006, which was a Barbecue Central show at that point. Didn't look anything like it does now in 2022, back in 2006, but it was podcasting was very rudimentary at that point. And my show blew at that point too. And it was like a whole different show. Like now I'm the ESPN of live fire, but back then I was interviewing members of my forum, asking them what grills they had and what's the best section of the forum that you like and things like this. It was really in a vacuum. So that's kind of how it all started. And then it's progressed from there. So it's just, you know, well, let's blame it on Glenn. Glenn, it's your fault.
Thanks, Glenn.
Yeah, thanks, Glenn. I think you bring up an interesting point just in grilling in general. I grew up in Hawaii, so it was like, hey, outdoor charcoal grilling year round. And that was kind of the big thing is like, you know, just started up with some newspaper and get some briquettes going. And it seems like, especially in the last 10 to 15 years, you know, everybody's about, oh, I've got a smoker, you know, fully automated, pellet fed, everything. I mean, when I think of grilling, it seems like something we've basically been doing to cook food forever, but is there kind of a proliferation of technology and interest in grilling over the last like 2 decades?
Yeah. I don't even know if it's been 2 decades. I look back so 2 decades ago, I would have been 27 and I was probably still into grilling at that point. I might've had my last kid a year before that or maybe just started to trend a little bit into low and slow, but you're right. It wasn't anywhere near the popularity of what seems to be everybody. You either grew up around it and were kept in it. It was in your blood. So you just were somebody that was barbecue guy or grill guy. But now you're right. A lot of people have multiple cookers. We call it multiple cooker syndrome. Just because you have one, you want to have four, you want to have 20. There's never enough for those of us that suffer multiple cooker syndrome. And people love the pitmasters of their neighborhood and they want to get all the information that they can. And as you look over the last 20 years, what's been the biggest growth segment of anything? Technology, the internet. Why does it seem like there's been a huge explosion of popularity? Because there has been, because everybody has access to everything instantaneously. You don't have to take a year to learn how to cook a brisket anymore, or travel, there's really no learning curve.
Yeah.
You can go to YouTube. You can go to this Pitmaster's website, or you can sign up for a masterclass. So the barrier to entry as far as learning curve has dropped to maybe where it's almost a very minor hurdle. And that's basically you deciding if you want to get a smoker or if you don't want to get a smoker, and that's your barrier to entry. Otherwise, it's really simple. Not simple, but you certainly have access to a wealth of information that you didn't 20 plus years ago.
Just to throw one thing out there too, is like a grilling neophyte. You know, I would consider myself a casual barbecuer at best. You've used this term pitmaster a few times. And what I want to ask is this like a more of a professional classification? Like, hey, I've achieved a certain certification, or is this just sort of the, you know, in your local group or whoever's manning the thing, the guy with the most knowledge, what in your mind classifies a pitmaster?
I hate the fact that I use the word pitmaster. It's just been tossed around ever since I've been into this. So I think it just falls out of my mouth by sheer repetition. I would love to ban it from the lexicon. Master itself means that you are better or you have achieved some level. As you were just saying, there's no school that you go to where you can get a certification for a pitmaster like you can for becoming a chef. You go to chef school, you graduate, and you get the certification. People will call you chef. It's a level of significance that you've earned. There's nothing like that for pitmaster. There's nothing like that for grill master. So I would rather just say live fire cook and have that span both sides of the cooking genre, both barbecue and grilling, and be done with it. If people want to sit there and pick nits and put a definition to it, I would say that maybe it's amongst your friends, the person that seems to turn out the best and most consistent product. He can get on a wood fire pit. He can get on a pellet cooker, or she, by the way, not a sexist. I have three daughters and a wife. So a lot of women around here. And they can get on a charcoal grill, and every cooker that's currently available, they can get on it. They're proficient at whatever the fuel source is. And they're also really good at cooking the proteins, giving you a consistent product in the end. If we're going to say, is that a pitmaster? Sure, they have a lot of skills. They know what they're doing. They know what they're looking for. They have the background behind them. But again, I would rather go live fire cook than master anything.
Nice. I like that. What makes grilling, being a open fire cook, what makes that to you, grilling to you? And what are some must have outdoor utensils, cooking products, and what's your setup that you need to make things happen?
I used to be really big on making sure that people knew that, in my opinion, there was a difference between barbecue and grilling. I've relaxed a little bit off of that due to my old age, but I can also bring it back up and say, these are the things that make grilling to me. It's high temperature, let's say 450 degrees and up. There's a direct heat source underneath your protein. So you have protein, grill grate, heat source, charcoal, gas, wood, whatever. And it's typically done inside of 20 minutes or less, unless you're doing something really weird. But traditional grilling, steaks, hot dogs, hamburgers, chicken pieces, the normal grilling fare, shrimp, that's done 15, 20 minutes or less. But again, it's direct heat source underneath the protein. Barbecue, in my opinion, is indirect heat. There has to be smoke wood for flavor, and it's the bigger cuts. It's pork shoulder for pulled pork. It's the whole briskets. It's the ribs, whether it's baby back or St. Louis. It's whole poultry. It's the stuff that takes, you know, chicken is the shortest. Then that could take hour and a half, 2 hours, depending on where you're running. That's the other side of it. My typical barbecue temperatures are going to be running 200 to 275 degrees. So obviously we've left off some temperature gap between, let's say, 300 and 450 degrees, where I would say grilling comes in. But then you're into like smoke roasting in that range. It's a little bit of a gray area, but those are my delineators of temperature between barbecue and grilling. And that's really what has gained popular. We've all grilled forever, but I think the interest in the low and slow barbecue has grown over the last 10 or 15 years, significantly more than it ever has, at least since I've been involved with it. As far as the setup and tools and stuff that you need, basically good grill brush. I would suggest that you not get a bristled one. They make these rolled or spun grill brushes now. Weber sells a pretty decent one. And we say this for safety purposes. Nobody ever really thinks about it until usually Memorial Day or 4th of July. Somebody will pump out one of those stupid news pieces where Larry last year went to the emergency room because he was making burgers for his family. Before he put the food on, he cleaned it off with the grill brush. The glue came loose. It was holding one of those bristles, and it dropped on the grill grate, and then he put the meat on, and it attached to the meat, and he ate it and went down his esophagus, and, you know, that's terrible. We don't want that. I mean, that should not be happening. There's no doubt about it. There's easier ways to clean your grill. There's more efficient ways to clean your grill, but people will tend to cheap out on the stupidest stuff, and that leading the pack is grill brushes. Spend a little extra money. Again, don't buy one that has the bristles. You can save yourself a trip to the emergency room and have somebody write a weird story about you that everybody's going to laugh behind your back about and be done with it. Tongs, nothing short. You want a good medium to long pair of tongs that's sturdy, the ones that lock from the back. Steven Reichlin makes a great pair in his Best of Barbecue line. I think it's XOX or OXO or whatever the hell the name brand is. I have two or three pairs of those. I've heard of people keeping an outside pair of tongs and an inside pair of tongs. I'm more of a, I like to clean OCD guy. So it freaks me out that somebody would just have an outside pair of tongs. Like, why aren't you cleaning those? Are you putting raw meat on there and then you're getting after it to flip? I mean, there's a whole bunch of things that are going on in my mind that make me really scared about that. So I have many pairs of tongs, but they all go inside and outside and they get washed top of spatula or on top of tongs. You're going to want a good spatula. Something's got a decent platform, again, sturdy, because you might be getting into some heavier objects. Also, they could double. You could use your tongs and your spatula. You could lift something heavy off together so they can be dual use or triple use type implements for your grilling and barbecuing needs. And then most importantly, before you buy anything else, if you're going to get into this, get an instant read meat thermometer. And don't cheap out. Or you're going to cheap out on the grill brush. You're going to cheap out on the thermometer as well. And I know there's a lot of people that say, well, you can get a really decent instant read meat thermometer for $20 on Amazon. Go piss up a rope. Go to thermoworks.com, buy the ThermoPen. It's like $85. I know, sticker shock. That's a lot. But it reads your temperatures in 1 to 2 seconds. It's plus or minus 1 to 2 degrees. It's got an incredible warranty on it. This thing is the respected measurement unit for thermometers out there amongst all of us, the professionals, the middle of the road folks, just the beginners. They know all about it. You get into this, you need an instant read meat thermometer. Why is that? Because you don't want to guess, especially with poultry, things that can get you sick. We now know that there are specific temperatures that you need to get your proteins to. Why are you going to guess if you're there when you can stick that thermometer in there and in 1 second, you know, still going to need 5 minutes. We don't want to get anybody sick. Or you don't want to crest over where your target temperature is for a steak. You're not going to get sick if it's a little underdone for the steak there, but you want, if somebody wants medium steak, there's a temperature range for that. If somebody wants medium rare, there's a temperature range for that. So you want to use those thermometers to ensure success. So those are the four biggest things that I think you need right off the bat. Everything else is just accessory stuff like earrings and watches.
And those are great tips. I mean, especially I think temping meat is just an underperformed practice in a lot of like culinary.
I think people feel like it's some kind of an affront to their manhood that if they take the thermometer and put it in, this thing you tell people, people tell you, oh, hit the meaty part of your thumb and this is medium rare. And when you touch your pointer and your thumb together, well, this is what medium well feels like. What are you talking about? There's no definition. Your hand might be bigger or smaller than mine. Your hand might be thinner or fatter than mine. So that's going to be different from person to person to person. It's not going to be consistent. That's what you want in live fire or barbecue. It's consistency each and every time. Thermometer gives you that. And you're just as much of a man using a thermometer than if you're not.
You're doing it right. You're making it how it was meant to be served. So
responsibility is the manliest thing.
That's right. Let's be live fire responsible, for crying out loud.
Yeah.
I think all these tips are great. I mean, these are things I'm like, oh, you know what? That's a good point of just like, I should just be looking at, into some of these things you mentioned here, like a new grill brush. Cause you know, we're a couple months out from grilling season, really getting rolling. But when someone's ready to kind of, I guess, take that step from grill to barbecue, as you kind of clearly delineated, what do you think is kind of the next step of, hey, I'm the guy, I've got my briquettes and my Weber, or just a simple propane tank. When I want to go to that next level, what do you think I should look at as like the next serious step in my apparatus?
Depending on what you already have at your disposal, if you have a gas grill, there's definitely going to need to be a secondary purchase of another cooking vessel. However, if you have a kettle style grilled Weber, obviously the most popular and most achievable pretty much anywhere across the country and globe, you can set up that cooker through the use of the vents, top and bottom, and do indirect cooking or achieve barbecue type temperatures to at least dip your toe in the water and see if smoked meat is something that you're going to like. If you're a single guy, no big deal. You can screw it up, blah, blah, blah. It's only your palate that matters. But if you're married and you have kids, oh, you know, I hate to break the news to you, but everybody might not like smoke on their meat. Or they might not like the same amount of smoke on the meat that you like. So you have to play to the general audience. And the Weber kettle allows you, I call it the entry, what do I call it? The gateway drug to barbecue. Because you can set it up. It's very, it has a lot of different features on it, cooking-wise, to allow you to try a bunch of different things. So you can set it up for barbecue, do a rack of ribs or two. You can do a brisket. I probably wouldn't encourage that, but a pork butt you can certainly do, and chicken. Throw some chunks of wood on the coals on the other side, see how you like it. And then if you decide barbecue's the thing for me, I would say entry-level pits. Weber Smoky Mountain is the go-to amongst most beginners. It's price point-wise pretty easy. I think it's still less than $400. I mean, it was considerably less when I got into it 20 years ago. But it's still quality price ratio is still very good. It's still a live fire. So you're dealing charcoal driven, but then you would drop wood chunks in it for wood smoke. It has the water pan to give you that indirect heat. It's got a decent amount of capacity. They actually make a 25 inch one now too. I have an 18 and a half inch or a pair of those. And those were the ones I cut my teeth on, and they make really good, not a lot of BS tech or all this other stuff that you're getting with smokers these days. Just a straight up bullet style smoker and real easy to use. Once you figure out how to work the vents and the draft and all that, you can eliminate all that right off the bat and get into pellet cooking if you want. You can set a temperature. You still get really good flavor from the pellet cookers. It's not a huge amount of wood smoke. You can drop a lot more wood smoke on the Weber Smoky Mountain than you're going to get on the pellet cooker. I think the biggest complaint I hear about pellet cooker cooks on the whole is that it's a much lighter smoke than you would get on an offset, obviously, or something that's charcoal driven that you're supplementing with wood smoke. So that would be like my recommendation to go next step up, get a bullet style smoker, see if you like it. And then if you really like it, now we're looking at offset pits, or we're looking at much more expensive pellet cookers or hybrids, things like this.
Hey guys, Drew from the Appliance Educator Podcast here, and I just wanted to take a minute out to talk about our amazing sponsor, Z-Line Kitchen and Bath. You've heard the guests and the hosts talk about this amazing brand and all the attainable luxury that they create right here in the heart of Lake Tahoe, USA. From freestanding ranges to ventilation, dishwasher, and microwave, to everything you'll need to complete your next bathroom project, Z-Line Kitchen and Bath is bringing luxury into your next project. And I've got one question to kind of jump in the middle here. So something that kind of came to my attention over the last 2 years, and I've given it as a gift to my dad, he's a propane grill guy, are these smoker tubes, where essentially you're going to kind of like simulate the effect of smoker cooking by feeding the pellets in there and having that kind of do some of the cook. What's your take on these like smoker pellet tubes? that you add to the grill?
I think the most popular one out there now is called Amazing Tubes, if I'm not mistaken. And conceptually, great. For a gas grill, completely worthless. Here's why. Because the gas grill is vented tremendously. So whatever smoke you're getting is rolling up that hood and just getting puked right back out of the back and the side vents. So the meat that's sitting at the grill grate under, you know, well below the hood, isn't really getting the benefit of what you're trying to achieve there. I've seen people use those in conjunction with pellet smokers to try and add a little bit more smoke flavor there. The smoke will stay in that chamber a little bit more because the pellet cookers aren't as vented as a traditional gas grill, because you're just having a tremendous amount of heat in those grills, and then you need a place for that to escape, and that's what happens. So, again, conceptually good, but in the end, it's not real great.
Okay. Okay. So going off,
Dad likes it. Good for him.
Well, he was in at first in one of those rinky dink, like the little canisters where you just put some chips in there. And I was like, Dad, like, smell this when you're cooking it, but you don't taste it at all. And then once I got him this tube, he was like, oh, I'm going to put it under. And then I turn the grill off and just let that do the rest of it. And he's pretty convinced it's working well. I mean, my brother has like a full on smoker, and I'm like, there's no real comparison here, but he seems stoked on it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, the one thing to remember with those is it's a smoldering burn. So you fill it full of pellets, or maybe he's doing wood chips or something, and you're lighting one end on fire, and then eventually you blow it out. So it's burning back into the tube. That typically generates more of a white smoke. That's what we would refer to as more of a dirty type of smoke. When you're looking at an offset pit, you really shouldn't be seeing visible smoke. That seems counterintuitive. You talk about, hey, we're smoking, and you're like, oh, we want to see a bunch of smoke coming out of the chimney or something along these lines. Nothing could be further from the case. You want a nice burning fire. When I use my offset pit, I have a real live acting fire in my firebox. You know, the oxygen is coming in, and just out of the exhaust, see like faint blue smoke, if anything at all. Like, that's what you want. When it's pumping out gray and white smoke, it's not what you want. That meat is going to fill up with creosote. When you bite it and chew it, kind of covers your mouth with this gross film, and you're going to get sick from that. You get like an upset stomach when you eat over-smoked food or dirty smoked food. So a couple of other things that you want to keep in mind in that regard. Always clean fire and very little visible smoke.
And to go further on, stepping up in your grilling or your tools that you're using, what kind of cuts of meat would you use to, you know, explore your new skills with that, you know, aren't extremely hard and don't need a lot of attention, but will advance your skills?
Starting out in barbecue, I always recommend getting the pork butt. Easily the least expensive, easily feeds the most people per weight and the yield that you get. You can get a 8 or 9, 10 pound pork butt at your local wholesale club. Maybe they're selling them in packs of two. You know, to me, depending on how your guests eat, because some people aren't going to like it, some people are really going to love it, you can feed 20, 25 people off of a 9, 10 pound pork butt. So, and they're super forgiving. So if you get the pit too hot, or if you overshoot temperature, internal finish, you're not going to pay the price with the finished product. So you can really learn the ins and outs of how your cooker's working, fire management, if you're using something that requires you to make damper adjustments. And then you can just, I think the cost just really allows you to be able to mess around and see what you like. And then you break the pork butt down. You have pulled pork sandwiches initially. Then you can use it for 100 other things left over, nachos, what I call heart attack potato. You can put it on pizza. You can make carnitas with it, with soft tortillas. So it's a multifaceted protein that is very forgiving and something you can easily learn on. And then from there, maybe ribs. Brisket always is the monster, right? So even now, I wouldn't sit here and tell you I'm a great brisket cook. I'm much better than I was, but, you know, having done the show, going into the live show for the start of its 15th year, I'm not touting myself as any type of great brisket cook. But that's what I would do. I would cut your teeth on pork butt and ribs and go from there. Although ribs were tremendously expensive over the last year and a half. So that's something to keep in mind, considering the environment that we're in right now.
Yeah, I actually did a rib experiment recently on our channel where I got a charbroil oilless fryer. I did a turkey and a chicken in it. It was great. And I had seen a couple videos of these guys doing ribs in it. I was like, oh, I want to try that. So I did. I stuffed two racks of beef ribs in this little guy. And I let it go. It was an experiment. So I had it on high, let it go. And it was really crisping up really fast. And I was like, okay, well, let me turn this down a little bit. And I let it go for like an hour and a half. And then I cranked it back up to get it that nice crisp. And wow, that was like the juiciest, like crispy on the outside, super juicy on the inside ribs. And from an oilless fryer. It was
that the Big Easy?
Yeah, the Big Easy.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I was shocked. Like seeing these, you're like, I would not expect this was a couple hour air fry. Like these look so legitimate for what it was. They were beautiful.
Nice.
Yeah, it was really good. And then, so you've been doing this for the show for a long time, in 15 years. And what is your go-to after all these years? Like, what are you known for? What's your showstopper, your barbecue treat?
It's ribs. Ribs up here in Cleveland, I think, reign supreme. A pork butt close second, just because you could, like I said, you can do so much with it. But when I'm really looking to show off, or if I'm asking people what they want me to make, the wide majority will say ribs. To me, St. Louis style cut, spare ribs. And that seems to win the favor of everybody that comes over.
Mm-hmm. Well, how do you prep those? You don't tell us all your secrets, but
I don't have any secrets. I'm not that guy. So I go to the store. The stores have changed. Like before, spare ribs used to come in a 3-pack, then they started coming 2-to-a-pack, then they started coming singles. I would say if you can get singles, you can expect, or you can inspect both sides. So what you're looking for on ribs, on the meat side, you want to see shiners. That's what we call, which means the bone is exposed through the top of the meat. That's called the shiner. You don't want that. You want to see just meat over the meat side. Then you flip it over onto the bone side, and you want to get the rib bones that are as straight as possible. And these are animals. They're going to be different from animal to animal, so sometimes they might not be super straight, but as straight as you can get on the backside. And then a good mixture of meat and fat. I'll try and steer away from ones that have like a huge amount of like globule fat that isn't going to cook away or render out during the cook. And then get them home, cut them out of the cryovac, dry them off, paper towels. I trim one or two bones off on either side just to get it a little bit more uniform in size. Flip it over, immediately take that membrane off the back on the bones. Meathead from AmazingRibs.com calls that the flavor condom. If you put rub on there, it's not going in. So rip that membrane off the back. There's plenty of videos on YouTube to show you how to do that. Then you can go ahead and start seasoning your meat. When you flip it back over, I'll take off any fat that I think isn't going to render in the cook, as I'd mentioned a couple minutes ago. And then if I want to square it up or make it look a little bit more aesthetically pleasing from there, I'll do it. But usually at home, you know, I don't compete, so it doesn't have to be perfect like that. And then it's Worcestershire sauce on the rib first, give a little rub in, and then I go a base layer of Big Papa Smoker's Sweet Money rub, and then over the top of that, I use Jess Pryle's Hardcore Carnivore red rub, good color, and that's a nice salty and sweetness, tug of war that's going on there. I set up the cooker to 275 degrees, racks of ribs go in the cooker for 2 to 3 hours until I'm looking for a color. A lot of people will talk about the 3-to-1 method. That's more of a guideline at best. I wouldn't follow that to the T unless you like really bushy ribs. But I'm looking for a color. Once that color sets, which is typically when the rub, if you put your finger on the meat after 2 or 3 hours, the rub isn't going to come off. The rub is set up and the bark starts to form. Every 45 minutes to an hour, I'll go in with just water and a spray bottle and spray the ribs. I have some grilling oil that I get from Butcher's Barbecue, I might hit a little bit of that for some extra moisture and some fat to keep the top a little pliable. But I don't, a lot of people tell you to use apple juice spray with apple juice every half hour, every 45 minutes or whatever, depending on the temperature you're cooking at, how long you're cooking at. Remember, apple juice is sweet. And the longer the meat's exposed to heat, if you have sweet on there, it's going to darken up. And I didn't really learn that until a number of years into this whole thing, wondering why my ribs looked darker than I thought they should have been. And somebody said, well, what do you use? And I gave them the whole thing. They're like, oh, apple juice is the problem. Use apple cider vinegar if you want to use something with apple in it. Or just use water and come back every 45 minutes or an hour and hit the ribs like that, and away you go. So then after I get the color I want, we go into the aluminum foil. I use it every time. I prefer the results with aluminum foil, but if you don't like that, you don't have to do it. So in the foil, butter, honey, brown sugar, meat side down, wrap it up real tight, put it back on the cooker for maybe 45 minutes. This is where, you know, the 3-2-1 method comes into play. The two of the 3-2-1 is 2 hours in foil. Depending on what temperature you're cooking at, you could murder those ribs in the foil. But it's like a long-standing way to cook ribs. I use the 3-2-1 method, blah, blah, blah. No, I would say an hour. Start with an hour. And if you don't think they're tender enough, then the next time, take it a little bit further. Or start at 30 minutes or start at 45 minutes. And then the next handful of times you do it, add a little bit more time in the foil. The foil is steaming and tenderizing the meat. That's all it's doing. And after that, back out of the foil, back onto the cooker for maybe, you know, 25, 30 minutes. If I'm going to set a glaze on there, I'll do it at that point. But going back into the smoke will just tighten the meat up a little bit. And then off to the table, slice them up, and away you go.
Do you let them rest for a little bit off temperature?
Oh, not for ribs. You're not really gaining a huge advantage there. I think if you're going to travel them somewhere, you can hit them with the commercial plastic wrap, throw them in a dry cooler with some towels over them, and they'll hold temperature, be ready to serve. You might gain a little benefit from letting them rest out, but you know, ribs are good hot, and it's not like a steak where you want to let it rest, you know, 10 minutes or, you know, whatever, just to let the juices redistribute. And even then, there's some science arguments going on in the live fire world about how much juice are you really retaining by letting it rest versus just cutting right into it. That's a different topic for a different day. And so, no, I'm not a huge rester of ribs, but brisket, yes. Brisket requires hours and hours and hours of rest, but again, different topic.
Ooh, this brisket's scaring me. I thought this talk gained some confidence with my ribs earlier, and I'm like, I'm going to start a brisket.
Yeah,
and I'm
like,
maybe I'll keep
practicing. Nick was just getting ready. He's like, man, I nailed those ribs. I'm moving up to brisket. So
you got to try though, right?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, absolutely. I'm not going to let it go.
I thought those were some great tips too for someone who's just like, hey, I'm ready for a little bit more of an ambitious recipe. Do you think for a beginner, are they going to be more concerned, or should they be more concerned with this idea that they're probably going to overcook stuff, trying to be like, okay, I'm going to do 2 hours in this and 2 hours here? Is it more of an overcooking issue? Is it an undercooking issue? Or should they just start to get really familiar with one recipe and the way it looks and feels as they're cooking it to kind of nail that first entry into real barbecuing?
I think the latter is the best advice. Depending on the cooker, you know, before the proliferation of pellet cookers, it was either wood fired offset pits or it was charcoal cooker, but either one was a live fire. So there was the saying that we say, you have to get to know your cooker, know how it operates, know how your vent adjustments are going to go. Once you get that dialed in, then you start really worrying about how you're going to babysit the meat. And I agree. Stick with a recipe, find a recipe that you want to try, and then work that recipe, make adjustments as needed, but work that recipe until you feel like you've nailed it. And then try a different method or try a different protein or something along those same lines. For anybody that's new or a novice or intermediate or professional, the best cooks in the land, whether they're restaurateurs or competitors, caterers, are keeping a barbecue notebook. I have my barbecue notebook right here. So every time you go out and cook, you say, okay, it's Sunday, it's this date, this is what the weather's like, this is what the wind is like, this is what cooker I'm using, this is the fuel I'm using, this is what I'm cooking, this is the temperature I'm running at. You track all your results, each and every cook, because if it worked really well for you or that recipe you liked a lot, you can make sure that you notate out what went well. And then if things went wrong, you can notate out what went wrong. So the next time you do it, maybe it's going to be a week or two or 2 months or who knows what the case may be. You don't have to rely on your memory to go back and say, did I do this the last time? Or is this what effed me up? Or you don't have to worry about that. You can go back to the journal, refer back to it, and you can say, okay, this is what I did, and this is what I want to change. And then you can track those changes through the next cook in the journal. So if you're not using a journal yet and you're already into barbecue, I would suggest getting one of those and keeping one, because that will help you elevate your game very quickly because you have all the results in front of you.
So while we may often think of barbecue as an art, it really is using the scientific method to approach. You're going to log your data and see the subtle variations, and that's how you're going to get better results over time.
Yeah, absolutely.
What are some of the coolest and most abstract open fire cooking builds that you've worked with or seen or eaten from? I'm very curious. I'm sure you've seen a lot in your day with it.
There's a pit maker out in Houston, a Close Pit, KLOSE, and he has built some incredible pits. Trains, they look like locomotives, but they're barbecue pits. Planes that look like, you know, jets, but they're barbecue pits. There's another guy out in Houston called Gator Pit. He built an offset. It's a huge offset for a company. They're going to use it, I guess, to like do lunch cookouts and stuff for their business. But they have something to do with the aviation industry. And on the top of the smokestack, they sent him this huge four jet engine, like prop plane. They sit it on top of the smokestack. So when it's running, the smoke is venting out of the back of the jets.
That's awesome. I mean,
it's insane. Wow. So have you seen the grill that looks like a huge six shooting revolver? So you open up the barrel and the cooker's in there and the drafting smoke out of the barrel there. So yeah, I mean, if you just Google like crazy cookers or, you know, most odd barbecue pits, endless images coming through. I always see the one every year where somebody's taken a tall file cabinet and they've removed all the stuff from the middle, and the first two chop drawers they put in cooking grates, and then in the very bottom drawers where they put in their charcoal basket, and they use a filing cabinet to do cooking on. So I mean, you can, as long as you have fire and something to put it on and it's safe, you know, I mean I'm probably not too into starting a fire into some kind of a file cabinet myself, but if you just want to see, you know, crazy stuff, you go online, you can find it. But that's those are some pretty cool ones. I sell a lot of Peterbilt trucks during the day as a sales guy. And I did see somebody make this Peterbilt Model 379 big tractor, sleeper tractor, into a pit as well. So in the engine compartment is where they were actually cooking it. And then the exhaust was coming out the exhaust of the truck. So
you lift the hood and it's just a big grill.
Yeah.
Instead of a pit master, a pit mechanic at that point.
Right.
You've shared awesome tips on just, you know, from the recipe to some of the accessories. The one thing, you know, with people kind of getting ready to plan, hey, summer's around the corner, I'm going to kind of, you know, everybody does their little annual update to the outdoor area. What are some other things you think people should just consider for their space of, hey, I'm going to barbecue, I'm going to grill, I'm going to have the family around? Any spatial or additional, you know, kind of accessories or considerations that kind of just make that experience better for you as either the cook or, you know, entertaining your family in that space?
I would suggest a nice accessory table for food prep. My wife got me one two Christmases ago. It's a nice hardy plastic or whatever, the resin, whatever the fancy word is, but it's got a stainless steel top on it, about 4 feet long. This thing is absolutely spectacular. You can use it just as a regular tabletop, or you can clean it. You can throw meat down there. You can prep it up right there and then throw it on, you know, the cookers that you have. Easy to clean again, because it's stainless steel. on the top, so you can, you know, bleach water it, or you can, you know, put whatever your favorite cleaning solution is down there. If you got a hose right there, boom, hose it off. Super easy. Plus I can leave it on the side of the house. I can pull it out to wherever I want. So I would definitely at least get one of those. I like a lot the solo bonfire fire pit. So usually barbecue and grilling guys love anything that has to do with fire. I had one of those umbrella propane heaters for the outside, but I didn't really find a lot of great benefits and value out of that.
Outside during the winter too, or any kind of weather, it's going to get destroyed.
Yeah. So mine fell over in a windstorm and the heating umbrella just caved and popped off and it was ruined after that. But this solo bonfire is super nice, stainless. It's dual walled. They bill it as a smokeless fire pit. That's like the worst thing. You go to somebody's house, they have a regular fire pit. They throw these logs on, they won't combust. They're puking out white smoke all over the place. And you go home, you smell like a campfire. That's not fun when you're 40. maybe it's cool when you're 16 and you're sneaking beers out in the backwoods somewhere, you know, no big deal. But now that we're more sophisticated professionals, they have these units out there now and they're open at the bottom. So what's happening is you start the fire. It's got dual walls with intake ports at the bottom, and it's drawing air from two different places. So you're drawing air directly underneath the fire. So you're getting a clean burn that way. But then there's also ports on the side, and it's drawing air between the two walls, heating the air, and then it's ejecting it out of the top ports that are also milled into there. So once it gets up and running, that superheated air is hitting the smoke, and it's burning the smoke as it's coming out of the fire pit. So once it's up and running, you rarely have any smell of smoke at the top. If you're running it really hot, you might get some of that black smoke, but that's just because you're running a crazily, insanely hot fire. But after it starts up, you'll have some smoke at startup. I mean, it's just starting up. It's got nowhere to go. But once you've established that first bed of coals, the smoke goes away. You've got a really cool like fire effect that's happening from the air coming in at the top that catches on fire as it comes out. So it's got a very cool aesthetic to it. It heats really well. They have a lot of cool accessories. I'm not affiliated with them in any way, but I'm just a big fan of the product. We use it all the time. I just used it the other day when I was grilling outside and it was pretty cold. So helped me stay warm. And then some nice outside like furniture, right? You want a nice couch, some tables, a couple captain's chairs. If you're going to put in the outdoor kitchen, then you want to make sure that you have all the other indoor niceties outdoors as well. If you're going to take it outdoors, bring everything outdoors. Maybe an outdoor refrigerator, depending on what kind of budget that you have. Outdoor TV, or put a TV out there with one of those weatherproof boxes. That's that's the stuff that comes to my mind when I think about spending a lot of time outside, maybe eating and being comfortable at the same time.
Let me throw a curveball at you too, since you brought up the outdoor kitchen. We talked a lot about airflow today and that being kind of really one of the key components of true barbecuing. Outdoor vent hood for your cooking space. Any experience or thought on that?
No, because I don't think I'm that rich. When I see those are the $1 million homes or more. They have these incredibly elaborate outdoor kitchens. They're usually all enclosed. Yeah. And so they have one of those huge commercial hoods over the top of them. Maybe only because they're not just naturally vented very well, but in a lot of other outdoor kitchens that I see around me, there's never been a hood, maybe a fan here or there to move the air around, but I haven't seen a hood. But if you got it like that, why not?
Great. Yeah, go for it.
Space, why not?
Yeah. Smoke them if you got them.
Smoke them if you got them. I think that's our send off. Smoke them if you got them. And thanks for tuning in, huh?
Yeah. I mean, after this conversation, I'm ready for some warm weather, cold beer and getting outside to cook some good food. Greg, thank you for all the awesome knowledge that you shared with us today. Can you just let our audience know, when they're ready to learn more, where do they go to find all the awesome Barbecue Central content?
So you can go to my website. That's the clearinghouse for all the archives and everything else associated with the show. That's thebbqcentralshow.com. If you'd ever want to tune into the live show, and again, I would bill myself as the ESPN of the live fire industry. It's not a food channel show. I'm not going to necessarily give you recipes. I have those folks that come on and we talk about all those things and cookbook authors and stuff like that. But I'm trying to hit all of the different facets of the live fire industry. So if you want to join me live Tuesday nights, 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern, you can go to my Facebook page, which is facebook.com/BBQCentralShow. I'm also streaming live on YouTube at the same time. That's /RDRempy. Don't ask about that. And then twitch.tv/BBQCentralShow are all video platforms that you can watch the show live on Tuesdays, or how 30,000 plus folks do every single month. They just get it on audio podcast, and that's available on any podcast platform. Just search the BBQ Central Show and away you go.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. And here's to everybody out there getting themselves ready for that next barbecue season. Thanks.
Thank you guys for having me. It was great.
Yeah. Thanks, Greg. We'll talk to you soon.
This has been the Appliance Educator Podcast, brought to you by Z-Line Kitchen and Bath. Be sure to like, subscribe, and follow at Appliance Educator for more tips and tricks and advice to keep your home running at optimal performance. If you have any ideas or topics you'd like to hear on future episodes of the show, leave us a comment. Appliance Educator, signing off.